Jerry, and I am an alcoholic.
Hi, Jerry.
Hello, hello. Okay. When I was asked to do this, it was like automatically I said yes, because I was taught early on to never, ever say no to when somebody in AA asked you to do service. So that's why I'm up here, is to do my service work. And I want to tell you that this is my first AA open talk here in Virginia. We've been here 3 years now, and it's my first open talk here, but I've done a lot of open talks in Indiana and Michigan. So I'm honored to be able to do it here, and I'm so glad to see so many welcoming faces. So thank you all for being here for me. I grew up in Hamtramck, which is a small Polish community in Michigan. It's only 2 square miles, but Hamtramck at that time, it's different now, but at that time, it's 2 square miles and had over 200 bars. There's a bar in every corner. And a lot of times, and I have to say this, when we were of drinking age, we would try to see how many bars we could hit before we got drunk. Didn't make very many of them, trust me. But like I said, I was a child in Hamtramck. Both my parents were alcoholics. I have three siblings, and only one of those siblings is not alcoholic. And we don't know how that happened, but she's grateful she's not, because she's seen what alcoholism has done to me. Before I go any further, I would like to thank Faye and April, because I'm wearing their lucky socks tonight. I'm wearing my Pete the Cat socks tonight. The story behind that is, because I am sober, about 6 weeks ago, I was Pete the Cat at the Norfolk Public Library for probably 7 or 8 branches. And that involved putting on a Pete the Cat costume with the big head and just entertaining the children by being Pete the Cat. And my good friends gave me some Pete the Cat socks and a little Pete the Cat figure. So I'm wearing my lucky socks today. So going back to my childhood, I can remember at 2 or 3 walking around the house with a bottle of beer. Getting my dad a bottle of beer, he'd say, "Geraldine, go get me a beer." So I'd go get him a beer. As we got older, if we had cold or we were not feeling up to par, my mom would warm up Mogan David wine, and we would drink that to get rid of our sore throats or whatever. So I was able to fake sore throats a lot just to get that wine. It was not easy growing up in the household. There was a lot of dysfunctionality in that house. Things that happened there, if it was happening today, CPS would have been called and we would have been taken away from our parents. But that was back in the days. I know my parents did the best they could, so I'm not bad-mouthing them or anything. God rest their souls. So I really didn't start my heavy drinking until I went to college. I went to Wayne State University as a commuter student. I got involved with a sorority, and so of course I went to a lot of fraternity parties, and that's when my heavy drinking started, was in college. I don't remember a lot of it because I was in blackouts a lot of the time. I drove drunk a lot of the time, and back in the olden days, as I like to call it, back in the olden days, the cops weren't so hard on people driving drunk as they are today. And I drove drunk a lot. I can remember closing one eye so I could see the line wasn't double anymore, it was a single line. And I can remember driving like that. I did the alcoholic geographical move quite a bit. I got married when I was 21. It did not work out. He was a drug user, and I was an alcoholic, and it did not work out. I remember I got involved with a married man about that time, and he said he was going to leave his wife, and he never did. But you know, that's the story. I was young and naive, and I just didn't care. You know, he had the alcohol. That was all I wanted, was the alcohol. And because of him, I moved to Chicago, because he was a manager at a building in Chicago. So I moved to Chicago. I stayed there for like 6 months, and then I moved back home. In the meantime, I had divorced my first husband. He tried pushing me out a picture window, and I said, "That's enough, I'm leaving you. Goodbye, so long, farewell." I lived at home for a while, and then I met my present husband. And the way I met him, he walked in the bar where I was at, and I was dancing on the table. And he was celebrating selling a very nice car, and he asked me to dance, and I said, sure. And so we started dating, and I told him right from the get-go, I'm never getting married again. Don't ask me. Don't even think about it. We broke up. And of course, through all this, I'm drinking heavily, really heavily. And he doesn't even know I'm drinking. I guess I hid it really well. We moved to South Bend. I had my daughter. Through the grace of God, I did not drink the whole time I was pregnant with her. Her first year of life, I was not drinking. So I was a kind, loving mom. But then, at her first birthday, I thought, I'll have one drink. That did not work, because the one drink turned into a lot of drinks. And that just, it just, where I left off a year ago or 19 months ago, it just exploded. And I became a mean mom. And that's what she calls me today. She says, I can remember when you were the mean mom. And I was abusive, I'll tell you that right now. I almost killed her 3 times. But for the grace of God, she survived all 3 times. I dropped her once, and there were a couple other incidences. This is how God worked in my life. I took her to preschool, and I'm sitting in the living room watching TV, and a commercial came on. And it was for Pathways of South Bend. And it had the questionnaire, are you an alcoholic, and gave you all 12 questions. And I was able to pass that with 100% flying colors. So I called Pathways, made an appointment to get evaluated. I went in. They said, you're a really severe case of alcoholism. And I said, okay, fine, whatever. And they said, you have to go in treatment. That I can't go in treatment. We just moved to South Bend. I have a 3-year-old at home. I don't know anybody to watch her. I can't do it. I have to go outpatient. They said, you're not going to make it. Nobody tells me I'm not going to make it. I'm going to prove you wrong. So I went into treatment. Okay, this is how God's working still. I don't know if it was God or Satan or whoever, but I went into treatment. And I told my husband I was going into treatment, and he goes, for what? I said, I'm an alcoholic. He goes, no, you're not. I said, yeah, I am. I hide my liquor. If you go looking around the house right now, you're going to find bottles. And to backtrack a little bit, my daughter's first words were, because I would take her with me when I bought my alcohol, her first words were, a fifth of Corby's, please. And that's when I really started thinking, maybe I have a problem, maybe I don't, but I kept drinking anyway. So anyway, I went to the first session, and the counselor met me at the door. He says, you might want to come back next month. I said, why? He says, you're the only female. There's 30 men here, and you might be more comfortable next month if you come there, because there might be more women. And I said, okay, you know, maybe I can go back home and just keep drinking. Well, guess what? The good angel on this side said, Jerry, you can't do that. you need to go to treatment. And the devil on this side's going, no, you can go home now. And I'm going, which one? And I finally said, okay, I'll stay. It was uncomfortable, I'll tell you that right now. You know, just like when you're the only female to go to a meeting and there's all men. But you know what? I've learned to get past that. I stayed in treatment for 30 days. And I learned a lot in treatment. I took my first step when I watched that advertisement on TV. I admitted I was powerless over alcohol. I took the second step in rehab. I took the third step in rehab. I took the fourth step in rehab. I took the fifth step in rehab. My fourth step, oh my God, my fourth step. So I wrote, the counselor had us write our fourth step out. So I wrote and wrote and wrote and wrote. And I probably had 30 pages of my fourth step because I wrote everything down except the important stuff.
Yeah.
I took it in. He read it. He goes, this is garbage. Except that's not what the word he used. And he ripped it up and threw it away. He said, go home and do it right. I said, well, what's right? What's the right way? He says, he handed me a Hazleton four-step guide. He said, follow this. So I went home and I followed the four-step. About a week later, I took it back to him. Oh, the only way you could get out of treatment was to do a fourth and fifth step. So of course, what do I want to do? I want to do a fourth and fifth step and get out of there. So I gave it to him and he goes, okay, this is better. So now you're going to do your fifth step. And I go, okay, fine, let's go. When are we going to do it? He goes, oh no, you're not doing it with me. I go, well, who am I doing it with? You're doing it with Sister Monica. I said, excuse me? Yes, you're doing it with Sister Monica. She's on the fourth floor of the hospital. I'm doing it with a nun. How am I going to tell her all this stuff? How am I going to tell her I slept around? How am I going to tell her I drank? How am I going to tell her I stole? How am I going to tell her all this stuff? You'll do it. Otherwise, you're not leaving. Okay, that's incentive. So I went up. We made an appointment. We went up to her, and I had my fourth step, handed it to her. And she's reading it while I'm telling it. She's not blinking an eye. I'm thinking, God, I wonder what kind of drug she's on. I wonder if she has any she can spare. And she just sat there with this blank look on her face. And I'm going, man, she must, I don't know. I don't know how she did it, but I'm crying. The tears are flowing. She's just sitting there stoically, and she must have been saying her rosary or something. That's all I can think of. She just had her beads there, and she's flicking through them. And so anyway, I got done, and she goes, okay, if I was allowed to, we would light this on fire right here in my office, and we would burn it, because I don't want anybody else seeing this. I go, well, thanks. I love you, too. So she says, what we're going to do is she just took it and ripped it all up and threw it away. In hindsight now, I wish I would have saved it because I want to know what I wrote because I don't remember what I wrote. I don't remember what I wrote because I was so afraid of doing that fourth step. And to this day, I can't remember the things I wrote in there. I've done several four steps since then because every time something happens and I feel a need to, I'll do a four step. And that really helps me. So anyway, we did the fifth step, did the sixth step. Then I humbly asked her to remove my shortcomings, had my list of who I had harmed. So then I had to start making my amends. And I wanted to, this whole thing, I don't have a sponsor. Because I didn't know I needed a sponsor at that time. Nobody had told me. So I can remember going to my first meeting and in Detroit, well, this was in South Bend, and they kind of did their meetings, they don't know, they did their meetings kind of like we do here in Virginia. So it was a big square, 50 people sitting around the tables. And I walked in and I'm saying, holy crap, what have I gotten myself into? And I sat down and I spilled my coffee. And the guy next to me says, honey, don't worry about it. I've been sober 5 years and I'm still shaking. His hands are going like this. I'm like, God, this is what I have to look forward to. So then they went around the tables talking. I forget what topic it was. I think it was the first step because I can remember every single one of them looking at me and saying something directly to me. And it comes to this big, burly motorcycle dude. He's got his leather on. He's got his tattoos. And he looks at me, he goes, excuse me, God, I'm in the church, I know. God damn son of a bitch, if you want a drink, there's the door, get out of here. I'll still be here when you come back, and I'll welcome you back. He used to throw a couple F-bombs in there, too. I was so freaking scared. I was so scared. I mean, it was like, holy moly, what the heck? Through the weeks that I was going to that meeting, oh, it was at a monastery, too. I forgot about that. This meeting was at a monastery. Every Sunday, it was at Holy Cross Monastery. So I kept going back. And after a month or two, he was just a teddy bear. He'd come up to me and squeeze me and hug me and say, I'm glad you're back. I'm glad to see you. And at that time, you were lucky to see anybody because it was smoking back then. And I would not be able to see any of you if this was a smoking meeting because you couldn't see anybody across from you. I can remember my first service work was emptying out the ashtrays, which were coffee cans filled with sand where they put their cigarette butts in, and you had to clean those out. It was the grossest, nastiest thing in the world. So I was glad when they did away with cigarette smoking. So anyway, going back to my ninth step, making my amends. A lot of my amends were accepted. And they were, you know, people would, you know, we would hug afterwards. We drove down to Ohio one weekend so I could make my amends to my sister-in-law. My husband took the kids out to the playground so I could talk to her privately. And we were sitting there, and I said, Vicki, I just want to tell you I'm really sorry for the things I've done, and please, you know, forgive me. If there's anything I can do to make it better, you know, let me know, guide me in this, and let me go through this. She goes, I don't believe you. You wrecked my life. You wrecked my vacations. And I'm thinking, how did I wreck your vacations? We went on one vacation together. But I kept quiet, and she goes, you're full of shit. And she walked out of the room. Never forgave me. Never said anything. So I just let it go because I went home. By this time, I have a sponsor. I went home. I called her up, actually. I called her up. I said, she won't accept my amends. And she goes, do you mean it from the bottom of your heart? And I said, yes, I do. She goes, then it's okay. As long as you're not blowing smoke, as long as you're firm in your belief that you've asked her for forgiveness, you're okay. Don't worry about it. And I said, okay, thank you. It took about, I want to say maybe, adding up in my head how old my daughter is, took maybe 4 years before we became friends again. And we came very, very close because she only has one sibling, my husband. So that worked out. I want to go back a little bit, too, because when my daughter was about 5 years old, I had been sober maybe 2 years by then. I started losing my memory, and I couldn't remember things. And that scared me because I thought, oh, my God, what's wrong? She learned to read a map at 5 years old because we didn't have GPS then. And we were in South Bend. We'd only been there 3 years. And she would have to read a map so I knew where we were because I would freak out because I'd have no clue where I was. So I went to the doctor and he said, oh, your brain stopped making serotonin. I think that's what it was. So he gave me some medication. And I've been taking that now for all the years I've been sober. And that brought me back on track with my memory. So that really helped out. I went to my daughter's teacher. She was in preschool, and I said, if you notice a difference in Taryn, let me know, because, and I admitted to her that I'm in the program, and I'd only been a couple months. She goes, oh, you need to see Linda Myers. My last name is Myers. We're no relation. She goes, Linda's in the program. You need to go talk to her and, you know, get together with her and talk about things. So we did, and I learned more about the program through her. And I also got a sponsor through her, and that sponsor took me through the steps. She had me read the 24-hour book, and we talk about the 24-hour books, and our girls became good friends. Well, fast forward a little bit, we moved back to Michigan. And I was scared because I got sober in Indiana. I knew where the meetings were. I had my friends in Indiana, my peaks. I knew nobody in Michigan. I didn't know where the meetings were. So we moved back to Michigan. And I said, on the day we moved, I said, I need a meeting. So I got one of those, I had a book of meetings, and I went to a meeting, and I sat there in the parking lot for an hour. Nobody showed up.
Wow.
Nobody. But my higher power was working, because while I was sitting there, I was able to meditate and think about things and think about everything I'd been taught in the program. And that helped me calm down. And that helped me get situated. When we moved into our house, like 6 months later, I was able to find meetings close to our home. And that's where I really became involved in AA. I started going to Joe and Charlie meetings. I actually met Joe and Charlie because I went to their workshops. I have Joe and Charlie's autographs. I met James Huck, who had a lot of sobriety. He got sober the day after Bill W. did. I met him. I met Wally P., who does Back to Basics. And that's where I got my firm foundation in AA. That's where I really started doing service work. I started doing Back to Basics, chairing Back to Basics. I started sharing how to listen to God, and I totally became involved. Then, I'm trying to think. So all this time I've been sober, and I was at a meeting. And I'm sitting there at this huge meeting. I mean, it's huge. It's like 200 people, and it's every Saturday at a mall. And this guy comes up and he says, hey, Jerry, how you doing? And I'm looking at him going, who the hell is this? I have no clue who he is. He goes, you don't know who I am, do you? And I go, no. He goes, I'm Doug's cousin, my husband's cousin. And I go, I thought you looked familiar, but I wasn't sure. And he said, you know, and that's when I found out, you know, relatives can be in the program too that you don't know. So we were able, when we went to functions as a family, we were able to go off by ourselves. And then, of course, my husband starts thinking I'm getting it together with this guy. And I'm going, oh, my God, no. So that happened. Then I find out my sister's brother-in-law is in the program. Once upon a time our next-door neighbor. Now he's in the program, so when I go to that side of the family, we have our AA meetings off to the side. So it's a small world. You know, the people we don't suspect are going to be in the meetings, they're in the meetings. Okay, fast forward. Guess what happens in the world? COVID. My first thought was, what the hell am I going to do? I was scared. We were doing something illegal. We were still meeting in the park. We stayed 6 feet apart. There were like 30 of us. And even in the winter, in the cold winter months of Michigan, we were meeting. The police drove by and said, what are you doing? You're gathering illegally. we said, we're just having a meeting, and they said, you can't do that. You have to cease and desist. If we see you again, we'll be arresting you. So we said, okay, fine. So we, you know, we all finished the meeting and we left. So what we decided to do was, instead of 30 people, we decided to go down to 6 people and have like several different groups in different areas of the park. And then somebody figured out Zoom, so I started going to Zoom meetings. And I became quite proficient at Zoom meetings. I still do a Zoom meeting every Sunday with my home group back in Michigan, so it's good to see those people. A couple years ago, it was Christmas Day. And the only reason I'm saying this is because even though we get sober, doesn't mean life isn't going to happen. I thought when I got sober, it was going to be all sunshine, roses, and butterflies, and kisses, and all the good stuff. I thought all the bad stuff was gone. And I should back up. I was sober 2 years when my dad passed. I was sober 5 years when my mom passed. And I'm thankful I was sober because I was able to be with them. I held my mom's hand when she took her last breath, and I was sober. I was with my dad when I wasn't with my dad. He passed away like 5:30 in the morning, but I was sober. My brother passed away 10 years ago. I did not know he passed. I got a phone call from a cousin in North Carolina saying, I'm sorry about your brother. I said, what are you talking about? Well, didn't anybody tell you he passed away? And I said, excuse me? He died. And I said, of what? Because I thought of alcoholism, because he was a heavy drinker. He had a heart attack. He was shoveling snow and had a heart attack and collapsed at age 55. I called my sister-in-law. She goes, we're not having a funeral. Don't worry about it. And if you come to the funeral home, we're not going to let you in. I said, okay. Turned out they did have a funeral, they did have a wake, but my sister and I weren't invited. We were accused of killing my mom because we took her off life support. And because we killed our mom, they didn't want anything more to do with us. So I haven't spoken to my one sister for like 32 years now. The only thing that's kept me going is my sobriety and knowing my higher power is with me. I trust my higher power. My higher power is everything to me. He gets me through anything and everything. No matter what, life isn't going to be a bed of roses. There are so many things that can go wrong. And as long as I hold on to my higher power, I know everything will be okay. Somebody at the tables once said, and I still remember it to this day, step to the right and let God go before you. And that's what I remember. Whenever something bad happens or something I don't like, I take a step to the right and let my higher power go before me. In 2020, we moved here in September. I believe it was that December, Christmas Day, I got very, very ill. My husband took me to the hospital, to the ER. They transferred me to Obese. And the doctor told him if you wouldn't have brought her in when you did, she would be dead. I would have died in 3 hours. I was in the hospital for 9 days. The only thing that kept me going was saying the Serenity Prayer, saying the third step prayer, saying the seventh step prayer, and just praying, praying, praying. I didn't want anybody coming because of COVID, so I was in ICU. I was fine. I was okay. The nurses were wonderful. And like I said, I just kept praying. I had my chip with me, and so I kept rubbing my chip, and I just, you know, and I told the nurses whenever they came in, I just say, you know, I'm in recovery. I told the doctors, and they kept asking me questions about it, and I would tell them. So I was able to leave there. I have still have some problems from that, but I'm getting over it. I'm trying to do what they tell me to do. It's hard, but I still go to meetings. I still make 90 meetings in 90 days when something's really, really off. And I can remember when I first got sober, I can remember them telling me, do 90 and 90. I said, are you crazy? I don't have time for 90 meetings in 90 days. How often did you drink? Every day. Well, then you can go to a meeting every day. I have a kid. That's okay, bring her. I did. I brought her to meetings with me. I put her in the hallway by the door with coloring books and crayons where I could watch her. And she sat there and waited for me while I did meetings. This program has saved my life. It has saved my life, and I don't know how I would do it without the program. I do the 10th step every night. And sometimes I do it right away through the day. And I can still remember the look on some of my kids' faces, because I'm a retired preschool teacher. I can remember their look on their face when I would say something and they would say, no, I didn't do that. And I would stop, take a step back and think, and I'd say to them, I'm sorry I said that to you. Those little ones were shocked that an adult would say I'm sorry to them. But you know what? That's where they're learning life on life's terms, and they're learning about AA. Become involved in AA. That's the most important thing. Like I said at the beginning, if somebody asks me to do something, I try to say yes. If it's a conflict with something, then I have to say, sorry, no, I can't do it. That's how I became the secretary of the district. They asked me to be the secretary, and I thought, they need a secretary, I can do this. And I'm blessed that Faye told me about it, and Faye is my driver a lot of the times because I have a hard time driving at night. So I'm grateful God put people in my life that I can give service work and do service work. Find people in the program that you have something in common with. Even if you don't have something in common with them, find them. Don't be a stick in the mud and sit there all by yourself. That's what I would do. I would sit there by myself and just say, poor me, poor me. And then I heard the phrase, poor me, poor me, pour me another drink. I don't want that. I don't want that. I want to stay sober. My granddaughter has never seen me with a drink. My daughter hasn't seen me with a drink since she was 3. She's now 41. So I'm grateful for that. I can remember she called me one day and said, Mom, can I have your big book? I said, why do you want my big book? What's going on? Tell me. She says, I have a client who keeps talking about this big book, and I want to know what he's talking about. I want to read it. So I said, you can't have my big book because I've had this book since I got sober, before I got sober, because it was the third time that I got sober. The first two times didn't cut it. Mm-hmm. So, because I wasn't like you people. Oh my God, you people were horrible. I would listen to some stories. I'd go, I didn't do that. I didn't do that. So I said, I will get you your own big book. So I packed up a box of big book, the 12 and 12, 24-hour book. I mean, any book I could find on AA, I packed it up in a box and sent it to her. And she still has it on her shelves at the university, because she's a professor at Virginia Wesleyan, so she can help her students. I am grateful I can pass the message along. I'm grateful I'm able to do this open talk. And I hope that at least I have at least one person here. I know I'm leaving a lot out. I'm just speaking from my heart and saying what my higher power wants me to say, because that's the way I think an open talk should do my open talk. My husband still complains today why are you going to another meeting? You've been to two already this week. And I said, okay, you have a choice. I can stay home and I could possibly drink again. Or I can go to a meeting and not drink. What would you like? He said, go to a meeting, get out of here. So that's what I do. I mean, I try to go to as many meetings as I can in a week. I take some days off because I'm sometimes so exhausted that I can't do it. And I know my higher power will guide me through whatever happens. And I pray every night. I pray for my higher power to help me. Let me back up. In the morning, I ask my higher power to keep me sane and sober for the day. Through the day, I say the serenity prayer. I ask my higher power to put the words in my mouth you want me to say, not what I really want to say. And at night, I do my 10th step inventory. I thank my higher power for keeping me sober. I thank him for keeping me sane. And sometimes I can't say the sanity part because sometimes I go off the deep end. But that's okay. That's who I am. I read my big book. And it's amazing how the big book fairies come at night and rewrite the big book. Because I can read something. I mean, I have the second edition, third edition, fourth edition. When the fifth edition comes out, I'm sure I'll get that. I have the large print. I have the small print. You know, I have every big book you can imagine. But my third edition was the one that I got when I was in treatment. And this third edition, I will never part with because it's got everything underlined. It's got stuff in here that, you know, I've heard through around the tables that I never thought of, you know. Fear. F everything and run, or face everything and recover. You know, all the cliches that I've heard throughout the years. My fourth edition, I have tabs in it so I can find step 5 promises, step 12 promises. I didn't know this, but did you know this? Every step has promises. I did not know that. I do not know that the 9-step promises coincide with the 12 steps. It's amazing what a person can learn in the program if I take the cotton out of my ears and stick it in my mouth and just listen. And that's what I do. I try to take the cotton out and listen. So I hope I've helped somebody in this room to keep trudging the road to happy destiny, because, yeah, it might get hard, but you know what? The rewards are tremendous. They are just so, so great. My favorite passage is on page 164 in the big book. And I know a lot of you have heard it, because I know a lot of groups read it at the end of the meetings. I don't have it marked, but as you can see, I have a lot of things marked. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we only know a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. That's steps 1, 2, and 3. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Steps 4, 5, 6, 7. Clear away the wreckage of your past. 8 and 9. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. 10, 11, and 12. May God bless you and keep you until then. My sobriety date is December 8th, 1985. God willing, I'll have 38 years in a couple weeks. Thank you for letting me have this honor. Thank you for being here, and thank you for being such a great audience. Thank you. I brought something with me that I've collected a lot of things throughout the years I've been sober. This is a page. It has all the prayers that an alcoholic should have or wants to have. It has the morning prayer, the night prayer. It has all the each prayer for every step. So I'm going to leave these probably right here. So if you want one, take one. If we run out, I will bring more the next time. So help yourselves, and thank you for this honor.
Thank you.